Promised you, of course, Qadri Ismail would be joining us. Always kind enough to join us here on the program, which we always love. And of course, you can follow him on Twitter at Qadri Ismail. You can catch the pre and post game Purple pregame show, pre and post game on WJZ 13. Q, how you doing, my man?
I am excellent. Doing well. Doing well. All is well in the land they call Baltimore.
Yes. I saw your tweet when you retweeted. I forgot what it was. Some dude really excited. Is that what the Ravens are feeling right now? A hell of an excitement because of the acquisition of Marcus Peters?
You know, I think part of the tweet was Rex Chapman does an amazing job of finding these videos that say, you know, is it a block or a charge?
Right, yeah.
And, you know, sometimes he'll put another caption on there and off it goes. Well, you know, this one was of a guy jumping off of a high-rise building and had another guy with him, threw the other guy down.
Oh, that's right.
So you think, oh, my God, he's going to pummel to his death. And sure enough, he comes out of it and he puts over his parachute and off he goes. I think for the Baltimore Ravens, why it reminded me of why they traded for Marcus Peters is because, you know, when you look at the offense, they're churning along extremely well. But defensively, they have some issues. They have some issues as far as getting to the passer. And I think at the same time on the back end of things, because Jimmy Smith went out in week one with a knee injury, they really struggled to, you know, really have a kind of good continuity of consistency. And that's where I think, for Eric DaCosta, it made sense to give up a draft choice, a fifth rounder for Kenny Young and ship him off to get Marcus Peters.
Now, is this a rent-a player, do you think, or is this something that they're going to stay with? Do you think they're going to sign him to a long-term deal?
I'm not exactly sure. I think a lot of that depends on Marcus regarding his talent on the field and showing up. I think the Ravens really, you know, they're the type of team that will sign guys and, you know, they're kind of shrewd about it. But if it makes sense for both parties, then they would. But a lot of that depends upon Marcus, you know, getting close to speed as far as what Wink Martindale wants to do defensively as a defensive coordinator and him putting into his defense. And, you know, I think it can go from there.
Now, here's the one thing that I thought of right away. Here's a cat that is in his – this is the last year of his rookie deal. And so we're talking about a guy that's already been on three teams, Kansas City, the Rams, and now the Ravens. And it's odd that a kid that's this talented would be on three teams in 5 years. But then I thought about the guy he's replacing. And since I'm a draft nick, I remember when Jimmy Smith was coming out of Colorado, my man had a ton of baggage. Now – he was walking into a locker room with Ray Lewis and Ed Reed and Suggs. And so you can put some of those guys that might bring some baggage in a locker room like that because they will police him. How is that locker room now that those cats aren't there? And is there that policing of that locker room that maybe you could help Marcus Peters kind of find his way a little bit more so he can actually stay somewhere and build a career? Because you know it. Remember, Jimmy Smith came in with a ton of baggage, and he's been a great citizen overall. He's grown up there.
Yeah, you know, and unfortunately, he's had some baggage still. But you're right. I think the Ravens have done a really good job as far as supporting Jimmy and getting him to, you know, continue to mature as a young man and now as a man. And I think for Marcus Peters, not exactly sure if it's locker room related or if it's off the field related. Obviously, when you're in Kansas City and they're picking you as a stud guy and you show up and make a ton of plays, and then all of a sudden you get, you know, to the Rams and, you know, you made some plays, but you obviously are not playing as well as you know want to play or feel like you're capable of playing. I think there's going to be those red flags there to kind of figure out what's going on, you know, for your career. So hopefully he gets the message that, look, you know what, I got to play, I got to produce. The locker room is a very strong locker room when it comes to, you know, holding one another accountable. And I'm sure, you know, he's going to figure out who's who in the zoo. And I'm hoping that, you know, he can be a good fit for what they like to do.
I was being nice with Jimmy because, you know, considering the baggage he came in with, most people didn't even give him much of a shot to survive in the NFL. I think he's, you know, considering he's been able to last this long, I think the Ravens did a phenomenal job with him because he came in with some serious baggage.
Yeah, no, I mean, Jimmy's had his moments, and like I said, you know, he's even had his moments here in Baltimore too, but I think overall he's done, you know, really a good job of recognizing. It's one thing, you know, for people just to, you know, throw out terms of, oh, he has baggage, or he's a troubled guy, or whatever. It's whether or not that guy has the support to overcome it. And I think it's imperative on them to recognize that, you know, they have to take ownership of it. And I think that's what Jimmy has done and why he's still, you know, part of the Baltimore Ravens.
All right, we're talking with Qadri Ismail, of course, former Ravens wide receiver and Miami Dolphins wide receiver. You can follow him on Twitter at Qadri Ismail. Qadri, what do you think this is going to do? Because we know Humphrey's a badass. So is this Peters thing going to settle that position now? Is that something that you feel will also help the pass rush too, if you have those two guys back there that can lock some people down?
I think that's the plan. You know, I know if you look at the upcoming weeks, you know, there are going to be some teams that are going to be testing the Ravens secondary. They've given up a ton of big plays. First time in team history, back-to-back games where they've given up over 500 yards of offense, and I think that's just unacceptable. With that said, you know, he definitely brings an instant, you know, level of talent upgrade, a level of depth that they so sorely need because of the injury to Jimmy Smith. And I think even with today's offense, it's not just about, you know, just having two guys on the outside, but it's having, you know, a guy that can play in the slot, a guy that can, you know, go up against your third and fourth receivers as well, because you do so much as far as offense is spreading it out and forcing defenses out of their comfort zone. So hopefully this will be a strong perk for what the Ravens are needing to do. And I think if he can be, look, you know, the AFC North, it's certainly theirs for the taking. And if you can get into the playoffs, I would bet my money on John Harbaugh when they take teams into the playoffs, because they're such a tough team to prepare for and play for.
Now, Q, how's the Lamar Jackson performance going with you in your eyes? How are you seeing his development as a quarterback?
I think he's done outstanding. I think in terms of his play right off the bat, you saw it in training camp, but, you know, when he played against Miami, there was just so many good things there that you saw as a quarterback and not just a guy that's just ready to take off and run. And I credit, you know, Greg Roman for putting him in a position to have a strong comfort zone as far as what he likes to do, the different plays, formations, all of that. And this week, you know, it was weird. Last week against the Steelers, he looked a little bit off, didn't necessarily go through his progressions and all that. And, you know, you were, you know, a little bit concerned because there were some turnovers there that, you know, I thought two were poorly judged by the referees. One, definitely, he should have, you know, kept, and so he winds up with three interceptions. But when you look at how he's played following that week against the Pittsburgh Steelers and what he did against the Cincinnati Bengals, you know, you're going against two division foes. It's always a tough battle. But, yet at the same time, you saw some really good things where he was actually going through his progression and getting guys involved in the offense. He didn't have Marquise Brown, who was his number one threat. So it was really cool to see how, even without him, Lamar Jackson was just hitting on all cylinders to the point where made NFL history with running the football as well as throwing the football.
Well, that's the only thing that I have a concern with. I still don't know if he's going to be a great passer. I'm one of those guys that if you're not accurate, you're never going to be accurate. So that'll be a question mark for a while now. But I still need – he runs too much. And you will die in this league running. He's got to learn how to beat people more with his arm. And it's great to get 152 yards, whatever he got last week. But you and I know eventually – eventually they're going to catch up to you, man. If they can break down Andrew Luck, if they can break down Cam Newton, they can easily break this kid down. And we saw RG3, once they caught up with him, he was never the same again. That's where I fear for Lamar, that I don't think he has a long shelf life if he's going to try to live on his legs.
Well, I think, you know, what Greg Roman has done is put him in some really good positions to not be just run happy. And I think he has progressed as a passer. I think he will continue to progress as a passer. You're absolutely right. You know, but if you look at, you know, what Steve Young has done, he was a running quarterback as well and a dual threat. And he was able to smarten up and recognize the balance, the delicate balance of when to run, when to kind of hold it. And then at the same time, if you try to rush him, if you try to get up the field, and I think that's where for Lamar, he's done a really good job of again, going through his progressions. You know, against the Miami Dolphins, it's all where easily he could have run. It was an all-out blitz, zero coverage. Yet at the same time, all he did was extend the play, not looking to run, but looking to extend the play, throws it to the back of the end zone for a score. You know, it's moments like that. I think he continues to progress, continues to grow. I think he recognizes that it's not all about running, but it's about smart running. It's about smart football. And I think if he can continue to do that, he's going to be fine.
I would imagine that he is one of those guys that's incredibly embraced in that locker room, because he is – I mean, he's the likable cat, man. I don't buy him as a quarterback yet, but I know that you want him to marry your daughter. I mean, that's the kind of kid that he is, because he's easy to root for. I would imagine that that locker room will go through walls for him.
Well, you know, they are 4-2. They're in the lead in their AFC division. When you look at what he came in and did last year, the team was left for dead after Joe Flacco goes down with a hip injury. Leads him into the playoffs. We see how he, you know, brings everyone up when it comes to just what they're trying to do offensively, and even give the defense life and hope. And I think, I'm a Lamar Jackson fan. I think that what we've seen so far is the real deal. And I think that he's only going to get better. You know, I put him in, you know, high praise because of his work ethic and his desire to compete and win, and you're absolutely right. He has the charismatic it factor when it comes to just what the guys around him think about him.
Qadri Ishmael joining us, and of course, Qadri has the pre and post game purple pre and post game show on WJZ13. You can follow him on Twitter, by the way, like I and so many others do, at Qadri Ishmael. Overall, how potent is this team offensively to make an impact in the playoffs? If they get there, which I think we expect them to be a playoff team once again, Q, how ready are they to maybe make a deep run in this AFC conference?
Yeah, you know, I think one thing is sitting right in front of them, the Seattle Seahawks at Seattle, and then obviously playing the New England Patriots on Sunday Night Football. So both teams... and then they also got the Texans coming up in after they play against the Bengals. So there are going to be some tests the next few weeks to see if this is an upper-tier football team. Offensively, though, they're the number one offense regarding yards, it's regarding plays. And at the same time, I think they're second right now in points per game. So they're putting up a lot of points. They're being very productive as far as yards are concerned. I think that this is an offense that absolutely is built to go far. I think these next few weeks against these better football teams, they'll need to play cleaner, clearly, but I think that they're putting themselves in a really good position.
Q, you mentioned Russell Wilson, and since we're talking about Lamar running, what is it about Russell Wilson? What is it about Emmitt Smith? You know, there are certain cats over the years that you look at, and I probably am going to jinx Russell Wilson now, but you rarely get a clean shot on those kind of guys. What is that gift that very few NFL players have that they're able to avoid some major contact in a game that's almost impossible to avoid major contact? And how, and what can Lamar learn from a guy like Russell Wilson? Because Russell has that magic that he knows how to run, when to run, and how to not get hit. And I don't know how he does it, because I just told you about RG3. He didn't have that magic, and that's why he's no longer, you know, maybe having the same kind of success in this league. What is it? How do they have that it factor of that? I don't know. You tell me.
Well, he's the highest paid quarterback, highest paid player. So whatever Seattle has done to figure out how to, you know, put money into his pocket and be the ultimate franchise quarterback is that it factor. I think part of it is just, you know, your football intelligence, your football IQ. You know, people talk about when you prepare for the game and you're looking at film and all that. It's one thing to look at film. It's another thing to translate it over right away in moment to moment, play to play, series to series. And I think that for what Russell has done, he's just recognize just the game has slowed down for him. I think that ultimately what it comes down to, and he absolutely knows how to make plays and has that good escapability. You know, that's what it ultimately comes down to for him and why he has, you know, progressed to the upper tier in the conversation of all the other, you know, upper tier quarterbacks when it comes to Brady, Breeze, you know, Rodgers, and clearly he's in that, you know, next breath. You know, Russell Wilson is right up there with him.
Yeah, it really is impressive. Follow my man Q on Twitter at Qadri Ismail. Q, as always, thank you for taking some time and dropping the knowledge, man. You are the best.
Absolutely. Appreciate that, Neil, as always, bro.
You got it, baby. You're a stud. There you go. Qadri Ismail, man. Good stuff there, as always, as Marcus Peters is now a Raven. That is, that's a hell of a move for them. Again, a kid that's got, you know, he's got some, it's not like he's a criminal or anything, but seems like there are some issues there because it's three teams now in 5 years. It's crazy, dude.
That's a lot.
That's way too much. That's way too much. And the Chiefs are a good organization overall. Pretty good team to have to get traded away from. Now the Rams, pretty good situation. You're getting traded away. And you're going to another good situation with the Ravens. I mean, how many more can you be at?
I was just going to say.
And they didn't trade much. So this could be just a rent-a-player. And then they draft somebody in the offseason to take over and be opposite of Marlon Humphrey. Because Marlon Humphrey is just one of the best in the league. I mean, that guy's Peanut Tillman.
Yes.
He's the
way he runs in and punches that ball out.
Well, yeah, that's his idol, by the way. Peanut is his idol.
You know what? That's not a bad guy to make your idol. Well, I mean,
he plays just like him.
Ball hawk.
Yeah, he plays just like him.
You know, it's not your ball. It's my ball.
Yeah, it's a gift, and he's really good at it. So they need to get that other guy. Now, we have some breaking news with the Miami Dolphins. Brian Flores addressed the media just a little bit ago, and he announced something that was big. Do we have it? Can we play it? Let's see.
It's there. I haven't downloaded it because I'm cutting up the segments for hour number one.
Okay. Well, you know what? We'll get it for you now in a minute. But basically, Brian Flores announced that Ryan Fitzpatrick is starting this week against the Bills. I think that's a huge mistake on Brian Flores' part.
You do?
Yes.
He's
trying to win.
Let me play the other side. The way he played against Washington and the fact you know you're going up against an even better defensive front.
Yeah.
Why subject Rosen right off the bat? Let Fitz go.
That's what it should be about.
See what Fitz gets. Not because, like you said, Rosen should learn from what he saw.
So put him out there now.
Let's let Fitz go out there because he did kind of earn it. He did come back. Let him play.
He's Fitzpatrick, and he'll play garbage this week.
Okay, so then,
because that's what Fitzpatrick does.
But then you subject the kid after sitting on the sideline and seeing and watching and see if he's able to piece together last week, and then see what's happening this week
So if it goes awry for Fitzpatrick, then you put him in?
Well, you're going to have to.
Okay, so then you're going to put him in when all hell's broken loose already, as Kiss would say.
Well, like I said, you hope that he's pieced together what adjustments were made last week, and you
so
see
you're going to put
happening.
Him up against the defense, and then he's going to be behind the eight ball on top of all of that instead of starting off 0-0?
You've had 2 weeks looking at two different teams. Let's see what you got, kid.
I disagree completely with this. This makes no sense. You keep Fitzpatrick on the bench, you start the kid, and if he doesn't play well, you bring Fitzpatrick once again off the bench. You cannot do the reversal here now, because if you're down 10-0 or 14-0 or 17-3 and Fitzpatrick is playing like he played in the first two games, then what do? You put in the kid in a deficit against that defense? That's not an intelligent move. I'm sorry. I couldn't disagree with this more. I just told you, I like Flores, right? You're not going to agree with everything. Here's one I disagree with. Maybe he's right. We'll find out on Sunday. But to me, starting Ryan Fitzpatrick makes no sense. You're in a developmental year. You know, I get it. You think as a coach, you have a better chance of competing. Your team has a better chance of competing against the Bills. So you think that you are now emotionally leading your team into the Buffalo game with a better chance of winning, so you'll have their spirits in. But if you put the kid in from the beginning, maybe you lose your team from the get-go. I get what
I
the thinking
say.
Behind
right.
all of that is, okay?
Well, with all the talk of we're tanking, we're this, we're that, the
I
way
know.
Fitzpatrick played, he did kind of look good. He almost brought us back. He's kind of earned the starting spot based on last week's performance of the two guys.
Yeah,
okay?
Man.
So it's a situation where if you don't put him in, oh, you are tanking, because we saw that Fitzpatrick was a better quarterback.
That. I'm not worried about that.
But,
I'm not worried about people
right,
and what they
what
think.
They
You're
think,
here
of course.
To develop players.
Right. Yes.
And you now take away a game and an opportunity for Josh Rosen to develop, because maybe he does respond. But now you don't give him a chance. And now you don't give him actually confidence.
You don't think that he's going to get a chance to get into the Buffalo game?
Yeah,
the way
but now you put him at a bigger deficit. You put him at a bigger detriment. Because if he comes in because Fitzpatrick sucks, which is a very good chance that Fitzpatrick
yes.
will suck this week,
right.
because that's what Fitzpatrick does. He does that stuff where he teases you for a week or two, and then he plays like crap. It's like we forgot the first 2 weeks where he wasn't moving the ball and was doing absolutely nothing. Like, we completely forgot about that. We completely forgot that Rosen was the guy that was the spark every time off the bench. And that's why you made the change, because it was time to make the change. So now you're going to go back to it? I disagree. You guys tell me if you agree with starting Ryan Fitzpatrick here. All right? You tell me on the text line, on the accidentlawfirm.com text line at 786-322-1105. Or on Twitter, at Big O Show, on YouTube, if you're watching, all of that, you go ahead. You tell me.
Well, let me ask you this. You said last week, you said concerning last week, Rosen watching Fitzpatrick, well, maybe the kid can learn. Maybe
yeah.
the kid could see, considering Buffalo's better than Washington, and Washington kind of like, we were paper mache, man, on offensive line.
Yeah.
Okay? Start with Fitzpatrick, let Rosen see. And then, you know what I mean? He's had that sideline thing. And see what happens
week.
When he gets started. Yeah, but this is a different animal, man.
Yeah, but you're now penalizing him for having a bad day, and he was actually making progress and playing all right, and he had a bad day, so now you have benched him, because that's what you've done now. You've benched him. You've penalized him.
You also might be saving him, because Buffalo. Well,
there's nothing to save, bro.
No.
This is about developing. This
okay.
is playing the damn game. If you're coddling him, then you're not developing him. So to me, this doesn't make any sense whatsoever. This is a terrible coaching move by Brian Flores. This gets you nowhere. Nowhere. This gets you. So we'll see.
Do you think Rosen's going to see the game? I mean, if I'm a betting man, I would say yes. Because
what do you mean, see the game? Oh,
well,
play?
Yeah, he's going to get in.
Of course, he's going to play.
Right.
Yeah, there's no doubt he'll end up playing, and he'll end up playing with a deficit.
So
they'll be leading, and then they get to just peel back and just go after him.
Well, then we're back where we were when we started the season, and it was about throw Fitzpatrick out there. We got four playoff teams. Let him take the brunt of the deal. Let Rosen come in when it's easy. You think so?
Yeah, we're past that already. This is game six now.
Yeah, but we're only a couple weeks into Rosen starting. Okay. We're not. It isn't.
And
16,
you can't give up on him.
You got to
leave him in there, bro. Let him make mistakes. Let him grow. It's just, how do you find out if anybody gets, if anybody improves when you don't put any confidence in them, when you don't give them the opportunity? You can't just yank the rug from under them just because they struggled some. That's going to be part of the process.
See, I don't think we...
It's not like you're benching Devontae Parker after he keeps dropping footballs left and right. You keep playing him, don't you?
Well, that guy should have been benched 2 years
ago. Okay, so you keep doing that, right? I mean, people are screwing up on the team. It's not like everybody's perfect. It's not like Rosen didn't have people drop footballs left and right.
But you know what? That's kind of by default because of our lack of talent. And they have talent. We know that.
Talent has nothing to do with the football hitting you in the hands, and you should catch the damn football.
Of course. But
that's what that has nothing to do with it. Devontae Parker has enough talent to catch the football, and he dropped it. Kalen Ballage has more than enough talent to catch the football, and he dropped several. Preston Williams dropped footballs. Everybody, they've dropped touchdowns for the kid.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it's... You know, to me, this makes no sense whatsoever. And this is Brian Flores panicking and desperately trying to win a game. And I commend them for trying to win a game. But we're talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick, the guy that could easily turn around and knife you right in the back with four interceptions.
Oh, yeah.
Right when you thought he was, you know, going to be your answer.
I could tell you, we saw it when he was at Tampa. Those first two games, he had 10 touchdowns. He went and played the Bears in Chicago, and he threw five interceptions in the first half.
That's how it is.
It could Jekyll and Hyde on you with the quickness.
Right. So, to me, this is a bunch of crap. And this is a weak-ass move by Brian Flores. This is a terrible coaching move on his part.
I almost see it like
terrible coaching move.
I almost see it like him saving
terrible
the kid from taking on the brunt of that Bills defense and getting him in when
you're going to play it twice a year.
When they're okay,
you're playing it twice a year.
He may get in there when it's 21-0. There's less rush. He has easier coverage, and he's able to maybe make some plays.
Then you're not giving him the proper access to what he needs. You're not assessing him in the proper environment.
You're not throwing him to the fire.
So the game's over. Let's put you in. That's Ryan Tannehill used to pad his stats at the end of games.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
And they would be blown out, but then he'd come back, and then I'd have the idiots call me. Well, but you know they stormed back. You know they lost, but he got some points there.
They're
and
playing prevent defense,
give
man.
Give me a break, dude. He took advantage of softer defenses. They gave him everything underneath, and he took it since he's man in the box. Give me a break already. So I don't want to see that with Josh Rosen. I want to see if he learned from last week. These are rough lessons, man. That's how life is. You got to pay your rent every month. You got to pay your mortgage. You got to pay your car payments. You got to work. You feel sick. You got cramps. I don't care what it is. Get your ass up. Get in your car. Go to work. Put in your hours because you need that check. Right? Same thing. This guy needs to develop. Get your ass in there. And play. And one thing I can say is they're better now than they were 5 weeks ago. So you're better. You're playing behind a better line, even though it sucks. But it's better now than it was 5 weeks ago. And you've got to be better because you got to learn how to get rid of it under 2 seconds. Pretty simple. Now, it's difficult to achieve, but it's pretty simple overall. It's, hey, let's test the player. Let's find out if he's got the goods. All right? Did he learn from last week? All right, we got a great pass rush. Get rid of the damn football, dude. I want to find out if he knows how to do that. Not starting him? Terrible mistake on Flores' part. Terrible mistake. That's not what this season's about, playing guys that are progress stoppers. And that's what Ryan Fitzpatrick is. He's a progress stopper. Okay? You're playing other guys that are making mistakes, and you're playing them through their mistakes, right? It's not like you're benching Christian Wilkins because he slammed a guy to the floor, and now the following week he's not starting. No, he plays again. So everybody should be allowed to make mistakes because they're all young. I mean, Mike Gesicki, for Christ's sake, are you kidding me? And he plays all the time. And he's useless half the time. You know, finally, Charles Harris has lost most of his playing time because of Taco Charlton. But, I mean, this is your quarterback. You traded a second rounder. Develop his ass. Put him out there. Send him to the Wolves.
Throw him to the fire.
That's the way it is, man. I'm sorry. Plenty of you out there, you're thrown to the Wolves, and you're part of your business. You don't always work under the best environments. But you got to try to fight through it, right? Well, same thing for Josh Rosen. Fight through it, kid. How do you do it? Get rid of the ball faster. Make quicker decisions. It's pretty simple. Know where your outlet is. Know where the hot read is. Adjust. If you know the blitz is coming, adjust. Make the right call. Call off one play. Call off a hot read. Let's go. Hopefully the young receivers, see the same thing you do, and you're on the same page. And when you throw that hot read, he's there and not taking off for a deep ball. Ball sailing out of bounds, guys running 20 yards downfield. You're like, oh, yeah, miscommunication. All right, we're going to talk to Vinny Bonsignori. We are already late for Vinny Bonsignori. Let's take a quick break. We'll get the Rams beat writer on right after this here on The Big O Show.
The Big O Show!
We promised you Vinny Bonsignori. We got some breaking news yesterday. The Rams, man, they were all over the place, trading one cornerback, trading for another cornerback. They got some controversy going on right now. They've hit a couple of bumps in the road. Vinny Bonsignori does an excellent job for The Athletic in Los Angeles, covering the Rams on an everyday basis. So he's kind enough to join us now on the program. Vinny, good afternoon or good morning in your case out there. You probably just had breakfast right now, right?
It's definitely good morning. But, you know, when you got a freshman in high school and a seventh grader, there's no easing into the morning or anything like that. So I've been up and at him for a long time already. So I've got the kids off to school trying to keep pace with the Rams. We're making moves by the minute, trying to put it all into perspective, so we're ready to rock and roll.
So when they made the Peters move, did you expect a Ramsey move? Or where were you mentally at the moment when they made the Peters move?
I was actually doing a radio show when that happened. So I went into a little bit of a scramble mode while I'm trying to, you know, co-host a radio show, but also doing my due diligence. And it's funny, and try to, you know, pull the curtain back a little bit. You know, for the fans, you know, when you start contacting, you know, your sources and you're basically talking about decision makers that are, you know, operating and trying to make it all happen. I have to say that there's always pessimism on their side that things are going to get done. So when my first question is, so is this laying the groundwork for a bigger trade, i.e., you know, it's Jalen Ramsey? And whether it's because, you know, they don't want to jinx it, or whether, you know, they're pessimistic that it's actually going to get done, because getting deals done on this magnitude are pretty hard. It's always, you know, met with a little bit of, instead of betcha or we're getting ready to do this, it's like, you know, maybe not. You know, they always have to kind of soft foot it a little bit because they don't know a lot of times if this is actually going to come to fruition. So, you know, a couple of hours later, obviously, it all did, but there wasn't a guarantee at that point that there was. But no doubt about it, making the move of trading Marcus Peters certainly laid the groundwork for a bigger idea that they had in mind, and it certainly was Jalen Ramsey. But when it happened, they were still operating on a bit of a leap of faith mentality because they couldn't be sure that it was all going to come into focus with Jalen Ramsey, but it absolutely did.
What is it with Marcus Peters? Because the kid's got talent, but he's now on three teams in his rookie deal. That's not a good thing. So what was it about Marcus Peters that he wasn't a fit for the Rams?
Well, you know, first and foremost, it had nothing to do with personality or anything off the field. He was really loved within the Rams family. He's a character. He kept the locker room entertaining. You know, there's a bombastic kind of a attribute part of Marcus, but it's in good nature. It's in fun. It's pretty harmless, actually. So there was nothing at all that had to do with that. What the Rams ultimately learned, you know, halfway through last year, they traded for him, hoping that he could be a lockdown man, cornerback, which fits with what Wade Phillips likes to do in a 3-4 defense. He loves to put cornerbacks on islands, and that gives him flexibility at other positions on blitz packages, whether you're talking about a safety, setting a safety, you know, or a linebacker, where you're sacrificing some coverage because you know that you have two cornerbacks that are going to lock their corner, or at least one, that are going to lock their guy up one-on-one. You don't have to worry about it. Well, Marcus Peters, unfortunately for him, he's good in a lot of ways, but he's not good at that. He's a guy that needs to be in his own defense where he's keeping the play in front of him, can keep his eye on the cornerback. He feasts off of that, kind of luring the cornerback into making some mistakes by reading his eyes and deking him a little bit from that vantage point. He's not a guy that's going to run with guys in one-on-one coverage and have to turn his back to the play and lose track of the quarterback. That's not what he does. So the Rams basically had to regroup and rethink how they did defensively to fit Marcus Peters last year. He played much better, you know, over the last half of last season, but it came at an expense because it compromised the scheme that they preferred doing. So he wasn't going to be in their long-range plans specifically because of that. He just wasn't an ideal skill fit for what Wade likes to do. Enter Jalen Ramsey, and so I think he'll go if in the right system, he's going to be fine. Now his contract is up at the end of this year. It'll be interesting to see, you know, if the Ravens make an investment keeping him around, but somebody's going to pay him, and he'll do well in a system that fits his particular skill set. Jalen Ramsey, on the other hand, plays that role to perfection. He might be the best cornerback in the National Football League at doing just that, being a lockdown corner. So in the Rams' eyes, that was a no-brainer to go and get him. Yeah, the cost was prohibitive, but essentially he becomes their 2020 first-round pick next year's first-round pick. So if you look at it from that perspective, they invested a first-round pick in him already, and they gave up a first-round pick in 2020 and a fourth-round pick in 2021 and for the first-rounder and fourth-rounder. So you're really giving up two future draft picks to secure Jalen Ramsey as your 2020 first-round pick, but 10 games earlier in the whole process.
Vinny Bonsignori, of course, from The Athletic LA, joining us. He covers the Rams on a daily basis. Now, with the whole Jalen Ramsey thing, and it's kind of a lot like Tunsil, it is kind of crazy that you trade for a guy and not have a deal in place, which now, Vinny, as you and I know, the agent and the player are laughing their asses off because they've got all the leverage in the world, because now those teams, and I'm talking about Houston and the Rams, they have to walk into negotiations on their hands and knees because those guys are driving all the negotiations at this point, and you're going to have to pay them, and I'm sure Ramsey and Tunsil will be setting the markets at their positions, whether those teams like it or not.
Yeah, and I think the Rams are operating as that's going to be the case, just as it was, you know, for Jared Goff, Todd Gurley briefly,
Aaron Donald
briefly, and that got trumped. Yeah, that got trumped by Khalil Mack a couple of days later, signed for more than what Aaron was making. And Zeke Elliott gets a little bit more than what Todd Gurley is making. So that's just the nature of the business. If you're gonna be operating as a premier team in a premier city, that's, you know, celebrity driven and talent driven and entertainment driven, you better be willing to drop the dime when you have to do that. And the Rams are absolutely operating, you know, in that world. Now, I from everything that I'm hearing, Jalen Ramsey is more than open to remaining here long term, and he certainly has leverage. Technically the Rams have him under control for the 2022 season, saying that it's going to go down this way, but there is the franchise tag that they can utilize after his contract runs out in 2020 and for 2021 and 2022. Not saying it's going to go down like that, but that is a possibility, and it's within you know their power to do so. But more than likely, he's going to re-sign at a really high cost and set the market at cornerback. It'll be interesting because you know the new collective bargaining agreement, the current one is getting ready to phase out. So it might be in his best interest to wait a little while to see what that new salary cap might look like. So he might not be in the biggest rush right now to go ahead and get locked in. He's under contract next year for around $14 million. So you know, maybe he can afford to wait a little bit. We'll have to see how that all works out. But one way or another, I believe Jalen Ramsey is going to be a Los Angeles Rams for a good long time.
Yeah, and you answered the follow-up question was, at least did they talk to him that he wants to be there? And it seems like you've been able to unearth that news that that at least he is committed to. I mean, hell, you're going from Jacksonville to Los Angeles, my brother. I mean, you couldn't be moving up to nothing to the folks in Jacksonville, nice little place and all that, but Los Angeles is Los Angeles, man. Man, that's a hell of a move up from Jacksonville to Los Angeles.
Yeah, and of course, you know, the Rams aren't going to do. I mean, it's a risky move to begin with, given the cost and what it's going to cost in money. They're not going to be, you know, overly reckless or even naive, and not, I'm sure, you know, get some sort of a feel for the temperature on, you know, the appetite for wanting to re-sign. So I'm gonna suspect that, you know, everyone is on board with at least, you know, giving this a go. And so I can't believe that they would make this kind of a trade. And I know that it's not the case. Make this kind of a trade without full assurances that, hey, there's a strong possibility that it's all going to work out in the long term.
All right, Vinny, what's going on with the team now, man? They're not the explosive Rams that we're used to right now. What's the latest?
Yeah, and I hate to be all cliched about it, but it really does all start up front because they're not getting the level of play at the offensive line that they've had the last couple of years. And it's not just the newcomers. You know, you had Joseph Noteboom, who was replacing Roger Snaffold at left guard. You had Brian Allen, who was replacing John Sullivan at center, and now Joseph Noteboom is out for the year with a knee injury. It wasn't just their transition, which was inevitable and expected, that it was going to take a little while for them to really get their feet under them and excel at an acceptable high level, which has happened. They've had to, you know, go through a learning phase. What happened that they couldn't really account for was the slippage in play from Andrew Whitworth and Rob Havenstein. So when you account for that, the unaccountable, it's all of a sudden two guys that were graded in, you know, in the top seven, top 10, and in some cases top five tackles in the league are all of a sudden, you know, way down the list. That doesn't help. And so they're not getting the protection and the blocking that they've been accustomed to. And that's affected everything from Jared Goff's play. He's not a, you know, Russell Wilson type. He's a guy that's a drop back passer that feasts on, you know, time to throw and dicing up defenses. He's very, very good at that. He's not all that good when he's playing under pressure. He's playing under more pressure now than he has over the last 2 years, and it's affected his play. But it's also affected what Sean McVay can do from a play calling standpoint. I mean, if you can't get the play protected at a level that is needed, there's no use even running some players or even putting them in the game plan if you don't have confidence that that's going to be able to get blocked. So the offensive line has to get better. And if it does, then I think that everything else will kind of fall into place. But they really need to get that squared away in a hurry.
Now, we see that's, you know, Vinny, I understand the market and how it is in this league, but it's got to be such a bitch for the front offices, because here's two examples. Dak Prescott and Jared Goff, they're solid quarterbacks. They're not, you just said it, they're not Russell Wilson. They're not Aaron Rodgers. You know, Aaron Rodgers was playing with a sixth rounder and undrafted receivers the other night making plays. He's not that guy. He can't carry teams. He can't overcome this kind of stuff. That we see these kind of guys, they lose a tackle and a guard. Brady does it too. The offense adjusts. The quarterback adjusts. They change their game plan. They get rid of the ball quickly. Those kind of things. They make quick decisions. The great ones are able to adjust. How do you handle this contract situation? Because I see Dallas and the Rams kind of in the same spot. You're going to end up paying elite money to two guys that aren't elite, because when there's chaos, they're not good. When there's chaos, the elite still rise above it. And so that's got to be tough for the Rams while they're assessing all of this and giving, you know, quarterbacks money and the Cowboys too. That's got to be tough, right?
Well, and then their argument would be, and the reality of it is, you just named two quarterbacks that haven't done a squat in the playoffs in how many years, as good as they are. And I think Russell Wilson right now is as good as it gets in the NFL. But, you know, even as elite as they are, that can, you know, like you said, hoist teams on their shoulders, there's still, a finite distance that they can take them when they don't have the complementary help around them. Russell Wilson has been a great quarterback when he's had really good teams around him. They've gone to the Super Bowl. They've won one. They lost another. Aaron Rodgers, the same situation. I mean, he's not taking teams to the Super Bowl left and right. He's not even taking teams always to the playoffs.
Yeah, but he doesn't have a lot. Right. But he doesn't have the talent. He doesn't have the talent the Rams have. But, we could argue that too. And neither does Russell Wilson. I mean, that's been the problem with Russell the last couple of years, is the line, the running game. Now they finally straightened it out, and the line is starting to straighten out now. But in the last three, four years, he was running for his life, but he was still elevating everybody around him, just like Rodgers does. These guys that we're talking about, they're a level under those guys. They don't elevate everybody. They're facilitators on their best days. They're not guys that can elevate a franchise. You said it yourself a little bit ago on Goff. He's not that guy that's going to carry you. He has to be a facilitator when he's got the pieces around him.
But when he is, when there are those complementary pieces around him, he's a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback that can out-duel a Patrick Mahomes, as he did against the Kansas City Chiefs on a Monday night, or a Kirk Cousins, or an Aaron Rodgers, as he did at the Coliseum last year. So it's, I get into this kind of debate with people all the time. It's like, well, then anyone could do that. If you just have a facilitator, type of a quarterback, then you could go out and get another facilitator. Well, you look at the Rams. Let's just take the Rams as an example. And I'll take it all the way back to Pat Hayden, Vince Ferragamo. The Rams had great offensive lines and great skill players for many, many years. They just never had a guy that can operate and function at a high, high level, with that type of help for years and years and years. Kurt Warner came along, great. That happened for a couple of years. They were lucky to get him. But in their history, they've never really been able to lock that down. You have a guy in Jared Goff that you know that if you put the right pieces around him, he's going to get you to the Super Bowl. He did that last year and won a lot of games along the way. The New Orleans Saints, he kind of carried them to that win. There were the Kansas City Chiefs game. He was the best player on the field when Patrick Mahomes was playing as high a level as he was playing. So you already know that if you give him the right help, he could get you to the Super Bowl. And that's the same. What I'm saying is with Russell Wilson, all these quarterbacks that you just mentioned all need complementary pieces. Yeah, they could win a game here or there by themselves, kind of like Jared Goff has been able to win a game or two, but you're not going to go very far unless you have it all rolling together, from your offensive line to your skill players. So they've taken a step back right now. Number one, Todd Gurley isn't Todd Gurley. We kind of know that now, right?
Yeah, man. Sad.
So all of a sudden he's out of the equation in a way that, we've all seen for the last couple of years. Then again, the offensive line has taken a step back. So, he doesn't have what he's had, and as a result, that's what the fact. If you replenish that around him, I think he's going to be as good as he has been. Just like a Russell. Now Russell Wilson, yes, he can win games by himself, but that's not a recipe that you're going to get very far in the NFL. And the Seattle Seahawks and the Green Bay Packers have proven that it needs to be functioning at a high level across the board to get where everyone really wants to get to, and that's to the Super Bowl.
Atlanta and Cincinnati.
I think we're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he is a notch below a Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
But when you have the right pieces, there's a guarantee pretty much, or has shown that, that he can get a team really far or help get a team really far. There aren't a lot of guys that can do that on the face of the earth. So I think the money was well spent. You just now have to make sure he's got the help he needs, just like Aaron needs the help in Green Bay, just like Russell needs the help in Seattle.
Yeah, I remember Goff last year in that New Orleans playoff game. He made two clutch throws that were under pressure late in that game that, you know, showed a little moxie. Now, is it more about the defense that they've played the last 3 weeks? Because when I look at their game log, they scored 40 against Tampa, 29 against Seattle, and 7 against San Francisco. So as the defenses got better, they scored less. Now here comes Atlanta and Cincinnati, and hell, Pittsburgh's secondary isn't any great shakes either. This is kind of the panacea for their offense, maybe, that now it loosens up a little bit. The last 2 weeks, they played some pretty tough defenses. They're not really going to face tough defenses coming up over the next couple of weeks. Is that the panacea for this offense, or is there an adjustment in your eyes that needs to be made?
Well, and having said this, I'm sure that those teams are going to play like the steel curtain, right? I mean, you just never know in the NFL. That's what's so great about the NFL. But yeah, you're right, and it should be, and it almost has to be, because here's the other thing about, you know, the Rams, whether you want to call it a Super Bowl hangover or just one of those years, because there are some injuries, that are piling up. Something's been missing across the board, even on defense. Like, when the offense plays good, the defense doesn't play good. On Sunday, the defense played a winning game against the 49ers. They really gave up 13 points. They gift-wrapped a touchdown to the defense or to the 49ers by fumbling the ball at the 17-yard line on the first play of the second half. I can't blame that one, on the defense. So they played a winning game on Sunday. The offense didn't show up. Previously, it was against Tampa Bay. The offense played a good game. They started slow, but they played a good game to score 40 points and throw for over 500 yards. But the defense gave up 50-something points. So it's one of those situations where they just haven't been able to get it going at a consistent level across the board. And that's really kind of...
Whoa, we lost you there, Vinny?
On offense.
Okay, there you go. I'm sorry, say the last two sentences there, because we lost you a little bit there.
Oh, sorry about that. Yeah, no, they just have to, it's been one thing or another. They haven't put it together on both sides of the ball the four quarters yet this year. They're hoping that that's going to be the case, but numbers-wise, it looks like the offense is getting ready to go into a couple of situations where they can really put the foot on the gas. But there's no guarantee, because there hasn't been yet this year, that the defense is going to be up to the challenge on the days that the offense is playing well. They just haven't gotten that yet. But they're sure hopeful that that can be the case. And if so, if you're looking at 5-2, this is two winnable games coming up against the Falcons and the Cincinnati Bengals in London. And then it's the bye week. If you're sitting there at 5-3 after the bye week, and you're starting to think about, okay, getting Clay Matthews back, he leads them in sacks with Jalen Ramsey, kind of get his feet under him with the Los Angeles Rams. I mean, the offensive line is starting to get better. There's plenty of time at 5-3 at the bye week to make your run into the playoffs. So, but they have to win these next games. If not, then you're going to be starting to look at 2020 here pretty soon.
Vinny Bonsignori does an excellent job of covering the Rams for The Athletic LA. Make sure you sign up for The Athletic. It's like $4 a month. You get the entire damn country. Can you believe that? You get all these beat writers and all these sports for $4 a month. It's a joke. And Vinny does an awesome job of covering the Rams. Follow him on Twitter like I and so many others do at Vinny Bonsignori. Vinny, as always, you're a stud, my brother. Thank you for taking some time.
Likewise, man. Great talking to you anytime.
You got it, baby. There you go. Vinny Bonsignori. Good stuff there. And you know, L.A. is top 20 in our downloads in our cities. Top 20. We have a lot of people in Los Angeles that are downloading the show.
You said consistently, like every day.
Yes. Atlanta and Los Angeles are in our top 20. And New York City also gets in there.
There are Dolphin fans everywhere.
Well, no.
That is a fact.
Well, but I mean, we're a sports show. I mean, we're hardcore Dolphins, of course, yes. But we talk about everything, dude. I mean, it's just that's we're gonna. We just talked about Baltimore and their trade. Now we're talking about the Rams and their trade. So you know, it's we're gonna have Kurt Hela. We're gonna talk basketball. We're gonna talk the whole China mess later on. Actually,
when that originated was
now
originated one of the funniest and whatnot. The DeMarco from the. From Jacksonville, right?
Oh, DeMarco.
Yes,
Murray.
When the Jalen Ramsey thing.
DeMarco, who's?
What was the guy's name from Jacksonville? I'm trying to think. We were at the cigar place, Cigar Boutique.
Yeah. What about
that
it?
Day? No, when the Jalen Ramsey thing first hit.
Oh yeah.
When all that first came out, I mean, we were on the story from day one.
Oh yeah. Oh, you mean? Oh, you're talking about Mike DeRocco.
Mike DeRocco.
Okay.
Sorry.
You're just like you're.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to throw you. I didn't mean to throw you.
I'm thinking of a player, and I'm like, what the hell is he? Yeah, DeRocco.
No, no, no.
Yeah, Jacksonville.
We were from day one. We've had it, and we've followed it all the way through, and now we put you in L.A. on the spot.
Yes, exactly. I mean, when Antonio Brown got released, Klemko was on with us, the man that wrote it. So we're on top of all those stories.
Had a little entertaining.
And thanks to those folks out there in Los Angeles that are downloading the show like crazy. We appreciate all of you for downloading the shows. All right, let's do this. We got to wrap up hour number two. We're coming back. We're going to switch gears. We're going to talk a little basketball. Kurt Hela from Pro Basketball Talk will join us. LeBron, China, it's a mess.
Also in that hour, I got the Flores thing.
Yes.
We got it. Yeah, it's like about a 4 or 5 minute from when they asked, who's your starting quarterback? It was about 7 minutes into the interview, and it was just real evaluating Fitzpatrick.
All right.
And then from there, it's the last 4 minutes talking.
So we'll get Flores on for you in hour number three. We are ready to rock and roll. It is hour number three. Wow, this is going by fast. Hour number three is next.